This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. This year is the 75th anniversary of the publication of Aldo Leopold's A Sand County Almanac. Leopold did not live to see it published. In fact, he was turned down by quite a few publishers who didn't think there was any audience for his book. It's gone on to be translated into many, many languages. Leopold died fighting a fire in 1948. Leopold wanted the title for this book to be Great Possessions. I've written that on the cover of my copy. The Aldo Leopold Foundation in Baraboo is celebrating this anniversary with a wonderful event that goes on for quite a few days. Natural, Wild, and Free Leopold Week goes through March 10th. And this is all free of charge. These are virtual speaker sessions. I did just now sign up. Tuesday evening, tonight, you can hear Diane Wilson on The Seed Keeper. Diane Wilson on her award-winning novel, The Seed Keeper, a story of remembering our original relationship to the seeds and through them to our ancestors. Diane Wilson invites us to reflect on long-term connection to the land through a Dakota family's hopes and sacrifices to protect what matters most. Diane Wilson is tonight at 7 o'clock, and then on Wednesday, tomorrow, at noon, Stewarding the Wild, a conversation with Carl Malcolm. In conversation with Foundation Program Director Steve Swenson, Carl Malcolm will dive into his intimate knowledge of ecology in the Gila region and how lessons learned from managing the Gila wilderness can be applied to the landscape in the Midwest. I've been reading up on this a little bit from Wikipedia about the Gila wilderness. It says, the Gila wilderness was designated the world's first wilderness area on June 3, 1924. Along with Aldo Leopold Wilderness and Blue Range Wilderness, the 558,000-acre wilderness is part of New Mexico's Gila National Forest. The wilderness is approximately 27 miles from north to south and 39 miles from east to west. The Gila Wilderness is located in southwest New Mexico, north of Silver City and east of Reserve. It contains the West Fork, Middle Fork, and much of the East Fork of the Gila River. The Gila Wilderness is the largest designated wilderness area in New Mexico. Aldo Leopold, in 1922, a United States Forest Service supervisor of the Carson National Forest, proposed that the headwaters area of the Gila River should be preserved by an administrative process of excluding roads and denying use permits. Through his efforts, this area became recognized in 1924, that's 100 years ago, this is the 100th anniversary, as the first wilderness area in the National Forest System. The Gila became the first congressionally designated wilderness of the National Wilderness Preservation System when the Wilderness Act was signed into law by President Lyndon B. Johnson in 1964. So that's Wednesday at noon. Tomorrow you can hear Carl Malcolm in conversation with Steve Swenson talking about the ecology of the Gila region and how lessons learned from managing the Gila wilderness can be applied to the landscape in the Midwest. And then tomorrow evening at 7, First and Wildest author panel. Since Aldo Leopold proposed its designation 100 years ago, the Gila Wilderness has meant many things to many people. Essayists from First and Wildest will share their own connections to the Gila and examine the diverse relationships people have with the First Wilderness area. Thursday, March 7th, 7 p.m., Ed Young, who wrote An Immense World. People love this book. An Immense World. Ed Young, his name is spelled Y-O-N-G. He will be speaking Thursday at 7. Human senses offer just one experience out of millions on Earth. Ed Young, award-winning journalist and author of An Immense World, will take us beyond the limitations of our human perception to better understand the wonders and wildness of our diverse planet. And Friday, March 8th at noon, the Future Leaders Fellows of the Otto Leopold Foundation will be on hand as they reflect on growing their land ethics and look forward to the rest of their conservation careers. This is a wonderful group, and I think you'll enjoy hearing what they have to say. For 9 months, the Future Leader Fellows have been immersed in the work of Otto Leopold Foundation and the landscape that inspired the Sand County Almanac. To find all this information and more, go to aldoleopold.org about Leopold Week. I chose today to read from a Sand County Almanac, the March chapter, The Geese Return. One swallow does not make a summer, but one skein of geese cleaving the murk of a March thaw is the spring. A cardinal whistling spring to a thaw, but later finding himself mistaken, can retrieve his error by resuming his winter silence. A chipmunk emerging for a sunbath, but finding a blizzard, has only to go back to bed. But a migrating goose, staking 200 miles of black night on the chance of finding a hole in the lake, has no easy chance for retreat. His arrival carries the conviction of a prophet who has burned his bridges. A March morning is only as drab as he who walks in it without a glance skyward, ear cocked for geese. I once knew an educated lady, banded by Phi Beta Kappa, who told me that she never had heard or seen the geese that twice a year proclaim the revolving seasons to her well-insulated roof. Is education possibly a process of trading awareness for things of lesser worth? The goose who trades his is soon a pile of feathers. The geese that proclaim the seasons to our farm are aware of many things, including the Wisconsin statutes. The southbound November flocks pass over us high and haughty, with scarcely a honk of recognition for their favorite sandbars and sloughs. As a crow flies is crooked compared with their undeviating aim at the nearest big lake 20 miles to the south, where they loaf by day on broad waters and filch corn by night from the freshly cut stubbles. November geese are aware that every marsh and pond bristles from dawn till dark with hopeful guns. March geese are a different story. Although they have been shot at most of the winter, as attested by their buckshot-battered pinions, they know that the spring truce is now in effect. They wind the oxbows of the river, cutting low over the now gunless points and islands, and gabbling to each sandbar as to a long-lost friend. They weave low over the marshes and meadows, greeting each newly melted puddle and pool. Finally, after a few pro forma circlings of our marsh, they set wing and glide silently to the pond, black landing gear lowered and rumps white against the far hill. Once touching water, our newly arrived guests set up a honking and splashing that shakes the last thought of winter out of the brittle cattails. Our geese are home again. It is at this moment of each year that I wish I were a muskrat, eye deep in the marsh. Once the first geese are in, they honk a clamorous invitation to each migrating flock, and in a few days the marsh is full of them. On our farm, we measure the amplitude of our spring by 2 yardsticks, the number of pines planted and the number of geese that stop. Our record is 642 geese counted in on 11 April 1946. As in fall, our spring geese make daily trips to corn, but these are no surreptitious sneakings out by night. The flocks move noisily to and from corn stubbles through the day. Each departure is preceded by loud gustatory debate, and each return by an even louder one. The returning flocks, once thoroughly at home, omit their pro forma circlings of the marsh. They rumble out of the sky like maple leaves, side-slipping right and left to lose altitude, feet spraddled toward the shouts of welcome below. I suppose the ensuing gabble deals with the merits of the day's dinner. They are now eating the waste corn that the snow blanket has protected over winter from corn-seeking crows, cottontails, meadow mice, and pheasants. It is a conspicuous fact that the corn stubbles selected by geese for feeding are usually those occupying former prairies. No man knows whether this bias for prairie corn reflects some superior nutritional value or some ancestral tradition transmitted from generation to generation since the prairie days. Perhaps it reflects the simpler fact that prairie cornfields tend to be large. If I could understand the thunderous debates that precede and follow these daily excursions to corn, I might soon learn the reason for the prairie bias, but I cannot, and I am well content that it should remain a mystery. What a dull world if we knew all about geese. In thus watching the daily routine of a spring goose convention, one notices the prevalence of singles, lone geese that do much flying about and much talking. One is apt to impute a disconsolate tone to their honkings, and to jump to the conclusion that they are broken-hearted widowers or mothers hunting lost children. The seasoned ornithologist knows, however, that such subjective interpretation of bird behavior is risky. I long tried to keep an open mind on the question. After my students and I had counted for half a dozen years the number of geese comprising a flock, some unexpected light was cast on the meaning of lone geese. It was found by mathematical analysis that flocks of six or multiples of six were far more frequent than chance alone could dictate. In other words, goose flocks are families or aggregations of families, and lone geese in spring are probably just what our fond imaginings had first suggested. They are bereaved survivors of the winter's shooting, searching in vain for their kin. Now I am free to grieve with and for the lone honkers. It's not often that cold potato mathematics thus confirms the sentimental promptings of the bird lover. On April nights, when it has become warm enough to sit outdoors, we love to listen to the proceedings of the convention in the marsh. There are long periods of silence when one hears only the winnowing of snipe, the hoot of a distant owl, or the nasal clucking of some amorous coot. Then, of a sudden, a strident honk resounds, and in an instant, pandemonium echoes. There is a beating of pinions on water, a rush of dark prows propelled by churning paddles, and a general shouting by the onlookers of a vehement controversy. Finally, some deep honker has his last word, and the noise subsides to that half-audible small talk that seldom ceases among geese. Once again, I would I were a muskrat. By the time the pasks are in full bloom, our goose convention dwindles, and before May, our marsh is once again a mere grassy wetness, enlivened only by redwings and rails. It is an irony of history that the great powers should have discovered the unity of nations at Cairo in 1943. The geese of the world have had that notion for a longer time, and each march they stake their lives on its essential truth. In the beginning there was only the unity of the ice sheet, then followed the unity of the march thaw and the northward hegira of the international geese. Every march since the Pleistocene, the geese have honked unity from China Sea to Siberian steppe, from Euphrates to Volga, from Nile to Murmansk, from Lincolnshire to Spitsbergen. Every march since the Pleistocene, the geese have honked unity from Currituck to Labrador, Matamuskeet to Ungava, Horseshoe Lake to Hudson's Bay, Avery Island to Baffinland, Panhandle to Mackenzie, Sacramento to Yukon. By this international commerce of geese, the waste corn of Illinois is carried through the clouds to the Arctic tundras, there to combine with the waste sunlight of the nightless June to grow goslings for all the lands between. And in this annual barter of food for light and winter warmth for summer solitude, the whole continent receives a net profit, a wild poem dropped from the murky skies upon the muds of March. And that's the end of the March chapter of a Sand County Almanac, published in 1949. Do think about looking up the Aldo Leopold Foundation website, which is aldoleopold.org. Think about joining the Leopold Week events, the virtual speakers, Diane Wilson, the first and wildest author panel, Ed Young, Carl Malcolm, and the fellows, the 2023-24 Aldo Leopold Foundation fellows. If you sign up for the virtual speaker sessions, replays of each event will be available to registrants after the live program. So if you can't make it to the live program, you'll be able to see it later on if you sign up. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Thank you for listening.